Your Grace, Archbishop Dennis Hart, your brief visit to Slovenia is nearly finished. How would you summarize it?
In Australia, I had great admiration of the Slovenian people and of the way in which their faith and their life came together. So I wanted to come with my great friend, Father Cyril, to visit your beautiful country and to experience something of the real faith, the love of Our Lady, the strong family life, and then the great beauty of the country, because I believe that beauty always leads us to God. And the Slovenian people are obviously searching very strongly for God, and they're helped by this beautiful country to do so.
Slovenia is quite different from Australia. It's like a small village. Australia is a continent. What has made an impression on you?
What you say is quite correct. People in Slovenia know each other so well. In Australia, we have huge distances, a sparse population. We don't know each other. And I think that secularism has come much more strongly in Australia, and it means that people are leading individual lives and the strength of family and community is not as strong. And that is one of our big challenges, to try and help our Catholic people to remember God, not to forget him, to think not only of themselves, but to think of what they can be there for others because of their faith.
You have met with the president of Slovenian Bishops' Conference, Archbishop Anton Stres. What about you were discussed?
When bishops meet, we always talk about the church in our particular countries. We spoke about religious faith and secularism. I would have spoken also about how grateful we are in Australia for what the migrants from Slovenia have brought and how well they are integrated into the community. But for all of us, I think, there is a challenge of presenting the gospel in new times, of bringing people to engage with Jesus Christ, and of trying to walk with people in society, showing them that despite the secular emphasis, that we, because of the great love of God, have something very wonderful to give, not only to ourselves or to our families or community, but to the whole of society.
Your Grace, can you briefly introduce your Archdiocese of Melbourne to our listeners?
Melbourne has always been the second city in Australia. It has been a diocese since 1848 and an archdiocese since the 1870s, and then a metropolitan. It's a very big city of 4 million people. 1,300,000 are Catholics in 216 parishes. We have a very wonderful system of schools. We have 329 schools, primary and secondary, so that most of our Catholic young people have an opportunity of attending a Catholic school and at least having a basic formation in the faith. We also have a strong network of hospitals, charitable and social work. The religious orders have been highly instrumental in doing that particular work. In Australia, in our schools, we've had strong support from both the national government and the state government in terms of funding. And I think this is because the governments realise that they haven't been able to do what we do as inexpensively as we do it. So the church is making a great contribution to society, and there would be numbers who are not Catholic who come and join us in our schools in some areas. So we see our schools, we see our parishes as an apostolic endeavour. We're grappling with the breakdown in marriage and family. We're struggling also with the relationships with what I would call the me generation, people who are focused on themselves. We're trying to give a much broader sense of family and community, and also to try and build in our people a sense, because we have received so much from God, we have to be there for other people. And that our vision, our Catholic faith, our philosophy and our understanding of God's love motivate us to communicate that love.
In May, you were elected president of the Australian Catholic Bishops' Conference. What are your plans for the church in Australia? What problems do you face?
When I was elected president of the Bishops' Conference, we had already decided that we wanted to walk with our people humbly in the face of some of the challenges and difficulties we face, but primary to us all is what Blessed Pope John Paul II said in Novo Millennio in Aeunte, that we have to start afresh from Christ. And for that reason, a committee of our bishops were reflecting on what we might do, and we went to the idea that for the Christian, for the believer in Jesus Christ, God's grace accompanying us and working with us and doing everything that we do in an atmosphere of relationship with God, of deep faith and prayer, is integral to all that we should become. So our challenge is to help our people to re-engage with God, because about 15% of Catholics would go regularly to Mass on Sundays. About a third of marriages are in difficulties. There is pressure in the local scene for all kinds of relationships which are not marriage. And recently, when facing calls for same-sex relationships and all sorts of other things like that, the bishops of my part, of my province in Victoria, issued a teaching letter, pastoral letter to our people on the nature and beauty of marriage and on the value of the contribution of man and woman in marriage to the proper bringing up of children and their proper teaching of the faith. So secularism, breakdown of marriage, individualism, and a general, because of prosperity and because we are a lucky, lucky country, people are forgetful of God. So we have to start afresh from Christ. If in the church we have been triumphalist and have turned people off, we come humbly to Christ. We seek to re-engage with Christ in our faith and then to carry that faith into our family life, our community life, our schools, and hence into society. Then, of course, just after we'd decided we'd have the Year of Grace, Pope Benedict instituted the Year of Faith. There is a wonderful connection, because if we start from Christ, we see him working, then we must want to deepen what we're doing in knowing and learning and allowing the faith to inspire us and to unite us more closely to God's plan for the world. Because God so loved the world, he gave us his only Son. It is our faith is all about God's love for us, God who loved us first and chose us, and our response, and then our spreading of that love and his truth.
Australian Church was Irish Church in the beginning. Now it's quite different. We have multiculturalism in church as well. How could you describe that moment of?
My first memories as a small boy in the late 1940s and 1950s would be that many of the priests and religious were Irish. There had been migration since after the First World War. Italians even came to Australia from that time. But the majority of migration began after the Second World War, and gradually the old European communities came, the Slovaks, the Slovenes, the Lithuanians, the Poles, the Italians, people from Britain and Ireland. And then again, the second Hungarian migration in the late 1960s, early 1970s, migrants now from Asia, South America, the Philippines, India, Sri Lanka, have all come and have brought a richness to the church in Australia. Indeed, it can be said that many of the best parishes in my diocese, people who have come from all over the world and who are living harmoniously together and giving great life to the church. I think one of the great mistakes that people made, not the church didn't make it, after the Second Vatican Council, was in some way to abandon some of the devotional life that we have. Now, we know that the sacraments, the Mass, the Scriptures, they are the foundation of our life, and they must always be that. But the need to love and the need to engage in a human way is also important. And I think that the migrant communities have underlined that engagement and have brought it to a new level. And I'm very proud of the people from all over the world who have come to work in Melbourne. Some of our Australian priests now are getting very old, and while I will ordain 5 young men for the Archdiocese this year, we have also been helped by priests who have come and joined us either for a time or permanently, coming from countries all over the world. There are the migrant chaplains like Father Cyril, who is doing a wonderful job for the Slovenians in Melbourne, and there are nearly 40 nationalities who have a resident chaplain caring for the people of that nationality. But the majority of the people that have come from around the world are well integrated into their parishes and are providing great life to our parishes, to our schools. So Melbourne is a vibrant church because of our many, many migrants. And this is a great encouragement to the Australian priests like myself that there is hope for the church, that there is engagement for the future, and that the hard work that the Irish and the Australians are doing is accompanied and even emulated in a way by what some of the migrant priests have been able to accomplish among us.
We heard a lot of indigenous people. You have Aborigines. They are probably part of your community as well.
Australian Aboriginal people are one of the most ancient cultures in the world. They are concentrated largely in the north of Australia, around Darwin or in Queensland. There are some in Melbourne, although not very, very many. Some in eastern Victoria, in what we call the Diocese of Sale. Over the last 150 years, all of the Christian churches have tried to walk with them. What I think has been a mistake is governments naturally want to lift the Aboriginal people to an Anglo-Saxon standard of living, and they've tended to impose programs. In the church, we've sought to care in our parishes where they're concentrated, to give special care to them, to relate to them. I think the answer must be that we walk with them at their level and we try and encourage them so that they can develop their own leaders who will be educated and trained and will respond, will draw a response from their people. But it mustn't be paternalistic. It must be walking with them humbly rather than imposing some kind of framework on them. It's very challenging, obviously, from European and Anglo-Saxon standards, we would want the best for them, but what we see as the best for them may not always be the best that they judge in accordance with their ancient culture.
You are a liturgy director and assistant master of ceremonies for the whole of the Australian papal visit in November 1986. What are your memories on Blessed John Paul II?
Blessed John Paul II was a wonderful pilgrim in Australia. He also named me as a bishop and named me as Archbishop of Melbourne. I think he had a wonderful knowledge of humanity and a wonderful ability to engage with people at all levels. In 1986, when I travelled with him, he was always engaging with those people at the deepest level. I remember one picture of him speaking with a young mother with a baby, and the baby is a bit frightened. She's crying. But faces of John Paul II and that young mother show that he has a wonderful capacity to give his attention completely to people, but to engage not only at the level of superficial conversation about the weather or about problems or something, but also to meet people at a deep spiritual level. And his own great faith showed through. And that was true when I went to the Oceania Synod in 1998, where John Paul was there, very much attending to the work of the Synod, very much engaging with people. Then, of course, his wonderful relationship with youth. I don't think anyone will ever forget the World Youth Days. I went to Rome in 2000, to Toronto, to Cologne, and then, of course, with Pope Benedict to Sydney and to Madrid. The engagement with people, John Paul's ability to draw them to a deeper appreciation of who they are, to inspire them by the love of Jesus and the wonderful love of Mary, our mother, I think has really focused the church in a true and authentic direction. And I remember him as a wonderful man who embraced people both at a personal and a communal and ecclesial level.
We are now just over 2 weeks away from the start of London Olympics. Are you going to attend the opening ceremony?
I'm going to London simply for a visit with a bishop who is a friend of mine and for some quiet time. I will be back in Australia in my diocese when the Olympics start. I do wish the competitors every blessing, but we have to remember that every gift and every skill that we have, whether of learning, whether of teaching, whether of prayer, or the great successes and training and gifts of sport are all gifts from God. And to me, the Olympics are a showing out of what God has given. After all, St. Irenaeus said that the glory of God is human beings fully alive. And I'm sure they're fully alive at the Olympics, but I would like them and us to remember that everything we have comes from God. For me, God is wonderful. What has happened in my life and what has happened in the church in Melbourne through these years is a clear indication that God is with his church and God wants us to engage with him in love and to carry that love and that truth into our homes, our families. And I do take this opportunity of saying to the wonderful Catholic people of Slovenia, what I see here is that there is a very close relationship between faith and family life and ordinary everyday existence. And these things are something which you are doing well. It's important to continue courageously and patiently. It's important to remember who you and we are, because only then will God's love and light shine in our world.
Your Grace, thank you for your words to our listeners.
Thank you, Tony. I wish the Slovenian people and your listeners every blessing, and I would like you to remember that there is an archbishop on the other side of the world who is deeply grateful and holds in high esteem the example of the Slovenian people here and in my own city of Melbourne. Thank you.
Thank you.